But just to kick off, my name's Fred Jorgensen. I'm chairing this session on anti-selective lapses in YRT business. We have as presenters Duncan Rawlinson and Martin Gilling. Duncan is currently interim CFO, chief actuary and chief risk officer for RGA's Australian business.
No longer interim.
Okay. Cross that out. Does that mean you're now confirmed?
Yes, it does.
Congratulations. As many of you will know, Duncan's got extensive experience before RGA in the Australian market and other overseas markets. Martin Gilling is Chief Pricing Actuary since 2010 of RGA, and similarly has had extensive previous experience in Australia and overseas. With that, we're going to have the presentations totaling about half an hour, and then time for plenty of questions.
Afternoon, everyone. For those who don't know me, I'm the Duncan part of the double act. I'm only going to speak for a few minutes just to introduce Martin. To be fair, he's done most of the work on this paper. And I think we are particularly keen to get through this quite quickly and to have the benefit of a good discussion at the end of this. We do think this topic is very topical and I think would benefit from a discussion in this sort of august gathering. Let me just quickly step on. I hope some have been able to find some time to read the paper that went up on the website towards the tail end of last week. I would characterize it as a bit of an old style paper, largely devoid of formulae for starters, topical, but most importantly, reasonably short. And we did this very deliberately. It's about 12 pages long. It is a good read. It's not a particularly heavy read, but I think the aim of it was really to raise a topic for discussion, a subject matter that we think is an emerging issue within the experience in this market. But as I've emphasised, we are very keen to have some good audience participation today. This is very much a work in progress within RGA, so I certainly don't want to suggest, and nor would Martin, that this is a definitively settled view within our business. It's not. But we are starting to see some things, and I'll turn to one in a second, which has certainly got us thinking, would be my characterization. So there's a few areas that the paper covers, most of which Martin will give an overview of today. But as I said, if you haven't read it yet, I would encourage you to do so. Just quickly by way of introduction, this chart was what I'd probably describe as the genesis of our thinking within the RGA business in Australia. As Martin's paper covers, this, to our mind, the issue of anti-selective lapse risk is not a new risk, not a new issue globally, but we don't think it's an issue that's had a lot of explicit airplay in this market, and particularly not in the context of YRT business. But we did this analysis on our portfolio last year, I think it was, which threw up what struck us as quite a strong correlation between lapse experience on some of our treaties and our claims experience on those treaties. And as I said, I don't want to suggest that we have a sort of settled view as to where ultimately this may come out, but that's certainly what's got us thinking and what has driven a lot of Martin's focus in this area since. And really, some of the ground that Martin's going to cover with you has also been very strongly reinforced by some of our colleagues overseas who have had product features in their markets which have clearly given rise to anti-selective lapse risk effects. Different product suite, different shape of benefits than the YRT that we're used to in this market. Nevertheless, we do see some potential parallels. So I'm going to stop there as an introduction and turn this over to Martin, and I hope this makes for a very good discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Duncan. Those of you who know me will know the reason the paper is devoid of formula and so on is probably because I can't actually do the formula anymore. It's been some time since I was involved at that level. As Duncan's talked about, we saw this correlation between lapses and our A over E experience, and it got us to thinking around what the impacts could be. Firstly, how do we How do we actually look at profitability as an industry? One of the overriding things I've noticed is that we now have very short-term focus on our profitability measures. If we look at direct company results, reinsurance company results, it's very heavily quarterly result-driven. Every quarter you're producing your financials, you're looking at your loss ratios potentially, and things are very short time frames. We don't always take the time necessary to sit back and look at the bigger picture and the longer view as to what's happening. And with anti-selective lapses, this is something that can be hidden. I mean, if we look at loss ratios, and our loss ratios are constantly around about the 45% mark for our IP or retail life YRT business, we can't actually tell if there is a selective lapse effect emerging. We have very heavy effects, very, very heavy positive mortality effects from selection at the initial underwriting stage in YRT business. And we've also had very high new business growth rates in the recent past. So the combination of high growth with very positive mortality select effects up front will potentially mask any anti-selective effects. For those of you who've read the paper, what we're looking at for anti-selective lapses may be relatively small. It may only be in the order of 1, 2, 3% per annum deterioration over time. That's something that can be completely masked by other effects, not just in terms of initial mortality selection, but there's also mortality improvement that we see coming through the market. There is also just random noise in our results. We have a very young industry in terms of YRT experience. We don't have masses of experience. We don't have masses of experience at long durations to be able to tell. And if deterioration is relatively slight in the order of 1%, 2%, then over time, it's actually going to be very difficult to know for sure through experience studies whether or not it's there. So it's something that we readily acknowledge does not necessarily show up in any of the work that we have seen thus far, but we think it's quite instructive to actually consider the possibility. Because what will happen if anti-selective lapses are occurring and mortality experience deteriorates is that over time we will see gradual deterioration, and that can impact the sustainability and profitability for the industry. Now, we do have some examples of anti-selective lapse behavior. I'm sure many of you will have seen the legacy income protection products from 15 odd years ago. And we now see that those products, which have very generous benefits, they have been subject to some incredibly high price rises. And over time, that's driven some very high lapse behavior. We're now in a spiral. We see ever-increasing lapse rates, we see ever-increasing premium rates, and we see ever-increasing experience on those products. So that the fact that it exists in the legacy IP is something of a bit of a warning for us that it might exist in YRT mortality business as well. When we looked and started looking at the selective lapse effects, one of the key things we looked at was what had happened overseas. And in North America, they have an example of very anti-selective products in their AIT experience. They had a very YRT-dominated market in the late 70s and 80s. And one of the interesting features of the US market was it was actually select YRT business as well. So not the straight YRT scales that we see here, but they actually had select mortality as well, which drove some incredibly high lapse rates at early durations and the resulting mortality deterioration that went with it. There were a variety of papers focusing on the effects of selective lapsation in the US at that period of time, a lot of which I've sourced information from for the brief paper that I authored. And I'd be happy to talk to anyone, obviously, about those papers and about the information that we found. Evolving out of the YRT business and the heavy selection in North America was the level premium term market that exists in North America today. Now, that doesn't come without its own challenges, and there is still very, very high evidence of anti-selective lapse at the end of the level premium term periods in the North American environment as well. And we'll touch upon that later on. In fact, we'll touch on it now. Sorry, I've changed the order of my slides. I did this presentation in New Zealand and I've restructured it. So the North American experience, they now have 5, 10 and 20 year level term products predominate, and it's mainly the 10 year level term. And they see extremely high lapses at the end of the level term periods, something on the order of 65% lapses at the end of a 10 year period. For the 10-year and similar numbers for the 15-year. And then post-level term mortality can be as high as 275 to 300% of the mortality during the level term period. So that's obviously a different challenge that you have to face in designing products. But what it indicates is that while we have YRT products here in Australia and we have lapse rates that are increasing, there is the potential for anti-selective mortality effects to emerge just at a much smaller level. So we don't see the 275-300%, but we could see, as lapses increase in the Australian environment, higher mortality. We see all sorts of effects driving lapse rates. And for those of you who sat through Clive's presentation, he would obviously advocate that a lot of it is to do with lack of competitiveness and for a variety of reasons. We see different reasons for driving lapse rates, a lot of them to do with the absolute premium size or the change in premium levels as well. When we have a YRT market with a 10% age increase, a 3 to 5% CPI increase, we're looking at 15% plus changes in premiums at every year. And for some benefit types, for TPD, for example, those numbers are even greater at the larger ages. So we see some dramatic increases in premiums, and the absolute level of premiums creates a trigger for consumers to review the need for insurance. When they are faced with this trigger, that presents a selective situation. If someone knows that they have something or they are aware of the potential for substandard mortality in the future, they will keep their product. If they believe they're healthy, then they potentially will lapse it. If they can get cheaper cover elsewhere by going through underwriting, then again, they'll lapse, be re-underwritten and re-enter somewhere else. One of the other drivers that we're seeing is increased market sophistication. For those people who have insurance, the ability now to go on the internet and find out things about your own health, to do bowel screening tests. We see examples of people in public profile, Angelina Jolie over the weekend with the bark cancer issue. There is increasing awareness amongst people of health issues and the ability to find things out that will then potentially impact their choice to keep insurance, all of which can be anti-selective. From our own internal studies, we see quite significantly different lapse rates by product. And obviously by age, as everyone would be aware of. Now, these differences also get more and more anti-selective. So when we get up to the older ages and we're looking at 50 to 65, which is often an area where people focus their insurance sales, we get very high sums assured coming in through these older ages. As Clive mentioned in his previous presentation, people tend to take out larger sums assured as they get older. And yet the lapse rates for those products can be incredibly high, and also by benefit level as well. So all of this potentially drives more and more selective behaviour. And while some of that selective behaviour might be baked into our mortality assumptions, there is always an element of anti-selection in there. And because the anti-selective effect may not be as large as initial selection, positive selection, it can be slow to emerge over time and may be hidden in some of the results that we see. And looking at the Australian experience, what have we seen for lapses recently? This chart is sourced from EdMG, where they do their IFA trend analysis. We have seen massive changes in the lapse environment in Australia over the last 4 to 5 years. Lapses were down at quarterly rates of about 3.5% in 2008. We're now looking at lapse rates up around about the 4% per quarter mark. And that's just been a steadily increasing trend over the last little while. It may be driven by any number of factors, including economic environment, including potential changes to legislation. All sorts of things could be driving it. But if there is anti-selection happening and it does drive mortality, the latest FSC mortality table was based off the period 2008 to 2010. If there is an element of mortality that is in that table due to anti-selection, then we now have, with higher lapses, potentially a higher anti-selective effect that we're not recognising yet. So really what we're looking at is trying to identify whether or not we think anti-selection can, and lapses can, cause mortality increases. The evidence in the US would indicate that it does. And then we're trying to work through, well, what are the implications for us in terms of pricing it in the Australian environment? What types of things should we be looking for? How might we use this information in the future? I touched on earlier the fact that we've had new business growth rates in the industry, and that with new business, which is heavily underwritten, contributing positively to our experience, This slide just shows the year-on-year growth rate in absolute premium terms. So as well as higher lapses in the industry, we are seeing diminishing volumes of increase in premiums, which will mean that if we have been in a relatively stable state environment and that effect is masked, the anti-selective mortality, then in the future, with increasing lapse rates and reducing premiums, we may see something emerge that shows experience deteriorate. Again, Clive's presentation showed a slide from Credit Suisse. I don't know if anyone was in that presentation, but the correlation between the decreasing profitability and the increasing lapse rates that Credit Suisse slide showed was quite interesting. So if there is anti-selection in our mortality approach, what can we do about it? I see Greg laughing. He must have seen a couple of these names before. In the US, there were some papers put forward in the early 80s around how to price anti-selective lapses. Dukes McDonald, Becker Kitsos, Shapiro Snyder, they're all 30-odd years old now, and the basic formula and basic approach that they proposed then are still in use today in terms of pricing for the post-level term lapse mortality that exists in the US. They are all based upon a single, relatively simple concept called conservation of deaths. And essentially that is that if you have an insured population at a point in time, then the number of deaths that will come from that insured population, whether they are still in force or whether they have lapsed, will be the same over time, which makes complete sense. What will happen, though, is if the people who leave that insured population through lapse are healthier on average, then the people who remain are unhealthier, so that you will see your experience in the remaining portfolio deteriorate over time. Part of the differences between the various formula that they proposed come down to effectiveness of selection as well. So some of the formula assume that when a person lapses, they revert to 100% select mortality before grading back to ultimate. Other formula assume various degrees of effectiveness. Not everyone will know or be selecting and be 100% select mortality again, but there will be some level of effectiveness in this process. Looking at a very, very simple example, and I stress, this was a very simple example that I put together. If we assume that out of all the lapses we have, about 5% of those lapses are anti-selective, so with our current lapse rates of around about 16%, if we assume there's a base level of 10 or 11%, which is non-selective, and then the remaining 5 is some form of selection, and those people who are selecting against us through lapse have 10% better mortality, and that's a constant 10% better mortality. I didn't want to get into the whole mathematics of trying to do a spreadsheet to sort this out. Over time, what we will see is that those people who stay with us, which is the red line on top, their mortality curve is significantly greater than the blue line, which is the standard mortality assumption for the population as a whole that we started with, or the green line, which is those who've lapsed and have the healthy mortality. A slightly clearer way to look at that is to look at it in this manner. So our starting assumption, 100% ultimate mortality, is the blue line. The people who lapse off, we assume, have 10% better mortality. And then those who remain have an increasing level of mortality in reference to our standard. And it's this type of effect that is the one that has us thinking about what we should be doing here. Because as you can see, it takes 10 or 12 years for a 10% effect to be seen. That is a relatively lengthy period of time for what, in absolute terms, in our products is a relatively small effect. But then, as you can see, it starts accelerating. So it's this possibility. It's the possibility that over time we will see increasing effects through anti-selection emerge in our mortality experience. Now, there are many reasons why it may not be quite as extreme as this. The assumption, of course, of 90% mortality is an extreme one. Obviously, the mortality of the people who lapse will not be at that level or be maintained at that level. But it's the possibility and the considerations around that we need to think about. And as I've touched on earlier, if we have higher lapses and lower new business, then we might see this type of scenario. We start off with 50% loss ratios in our business, and then over time, as lapses increase, we get the red line, and then if new business volumes with the highly select mortality at the start drop off, then we get the green line. As an industry, we are seeing both of those effects right now, so many companies are seeing deteriorations in their loss ratios. It partially could be as a result of this. If we do consider anti-selective mortality, then there are a number of things we have to look at, as well as just the pricing response. We're not going to get into those today, but there'll be valuation issues, there'll be capital issues, there will be the need to consider a change in how we price for new business potentially into the future. While we have the ability to reprice our business at a level, we can increase rates. There are obvious disadvantages to putting up rates across the board for consumers, for advisors, for the entire industry. We would lose the confidence of the market. So massive rate increases in response to this isn't necessarily the best approach. And thinking in advance about what we do in terms of design is something that we could look at. So in summary, and to give us a chance for a good conversation about this, we have seen anti-selective effects exist overseas in the North American marketplace in a YRT product design, and both in level term product design. We've had big changes in lapse rates locally. They've increased from 3.5% to 4% or thereabouts, so at least 2% per year over the last 3 or 4 years. That could be anti-selective to some extent. We've seen fall in the new business volumes, so the positive effect of selection there is being reduced. And we've also seen recent evidence that mortality improvement may be slowing as well. So with reducing mortality improvement, there could be effects as well. So our view is that all of this combines to present an argument that anti-selective lapses do exist. They are impacting and have the potential to further impact the profitability of the industry. And it's something that we do need to consider going forward. And with that, I'll conclude my comments today. And as Duncan said, we're very happy to hear any thoughts from anybody as to experience that you're seeing in your companies, anyone else who's thinking about this as an issue for their organisation, anyone who has ideas around product design changes or anything at all about how we might consider this as an industry.
Okay. Looking for the first question or comment from the floor. Alex.
Alex Stitt. Is that on?
Yeah.
Good. I hope this isn't habit forming for you. Thank you very much. Very interesting. I want to do two things, if I can. The first is just ask a question which is rhetorical. To what extent is it not the case that we've already got selective lapsation in the information we have, and the only change in the game is that you've pointed out here is that the lapses have been increasing recently? So that's one. I'll leave you to respond to that if you wish to. But I particularly want to respond to the point you've made that lapses have been increasing in recent years, because I've seen statistics recently which support that absolutely, and would encourage everybody who's seeing that in their portfolios to start digging into some of the sorts of other factors that might be causing that, that aren't necessarily selective lapsation, because I've seen some statistics around the place that suggest that when you start looking at case size, you see very different lapse rates. When you start looking at duration, you see very different lapse rates. When you look at channel, you might see very different lapse rates. You start putting some of those combinations together, you might start seeing business patterns that suggest that some of the issues that are facing us in the lapse in the industry at the moment are business controllable issues that are reflective of something else in the environment, whether it's the economic conditions or whatever else, or the other changes that are going on in other parts of the industry. But it says to me there's other business issues that are going on underneath that need to be understood at the same time as trying to understand this one. And it certainly, I think, pays companies dividends to go and look at that and try and understand exactly what those forces are, because it gives them something that's quite manageable to work with. And that's not to say in any way that this isn't an issue that people should be considering. It's just, I think, there are some other issues floating around there as well that are well worth considering.
Thank you, Alex. Did everyone hear those 2 points? So the first point was that there probably is an element of selective lapse mortality already built into our mortality tables. And the second was that there are, if you delve into the actual breakdown of lapses, all sorts of drivers that may be non-selective in terms of what is driving lapse behaviour. Alex, to address your first point, in terms of there being some level of selective mortality in experience studies in mortality tables, absolutely. And certainly we would not be saying that we think that there is no level of selection already built into those tables. What we see, though, is that the YRT market in Australia is still relatively embryonic in terms of the experience that we have. The FSC KPMG table that's recently been announced, recently released, is the first table to cover YRT business specifically. Previous mortality tables have not been specifically for YRT. And because of the nature of YRT business with very high lapse rates, I mean, we're talking 12% by policy number, the amount by amounts is higher. But with the very high lapse rates that we see, what it means is that there is relatively little later duration experience. So while there might be some level of anti-selective lapse mortality in the experience, it's probably more at the earlier durations right now, which can be more heavily masked by the effects of medical selection. What we are wanting to think about and what we are hoping that people start considering is that with more experience emerging in the future years, there potentially is a greater selective effect at subsequent durations. We actually have talked to KPMG about this in terms of looking at FSC data to see what we could find out. But the evidence isn't there at this stage, and we'll admit that there's nothing there. But as I pointed out, if we're only talking about 1% or 2% then per year, then it takes a while to build up, and even then, with the standard deviations around the actual results, it can be hidden in that type of number. So I would say, yes, there absolutely is some level of mortality in the industry table that is due to anti-selective behaviour, and that what we need to consider is the difference between generations of lapse or generations of when a mortality table is constructed to what we're experiencing now, because that will be instructive in terms of future mortality. Turning to your second point, Alex, in terms of the other factors in lapses, absolutely. There's a ton of factors out there that will drive lapse behaviour. Not all of it is anti-selective. However, what I would say is that if you're looking at lapsing your policy for any particular reason, then human nature is such that we will consider whether or not we think we need the product. And while the driver may be initially a non-mortality related driver, the potential for a person to then sit down and say, but hang on, I know my mum and dad have died of a heart attack at age 56, I know that my sister's got this, I know that my brother's got this. That ability of people to do a bowel screening test for themselves and so on does mean that even though that initial driver may not be fully selective, there will definitely be some element of anti-selection occurring.
Hi, Mike Thornton from AMP. A sort of related question to Alex's. I'm interested in, I guess, the US example and what it was that led to the US moving to level premium business, whether there was a burning platform and the extent to which companies took bold action. If I think about some of the increased lapses and potentially selective lapsation we're seeing here in Australia, I see a lot of structural issues with our industry, the prevalence of the research houses, the desire to add bells and whistles to products, commission structures, focuses on sales, which are all quite well entrenched and have been in place for some time. So coming back to the US example, what's the burning platform? How did that change occur, and do you think what are the parallels for Australia?
Thanks, Mike. Just to summarise very quickly, Mike asked, what was the driver for the US change? Was it a burning platform? And what sort of parallels can we draw to the Australian industry? It absolutely was a burning platform. What the US saw, and I mentioned this earlier, was they had select YRT rates, which I think is absolutely crazy. But you could actually come in with sort of 50% of the YRT rate in the first year and then grade into an ultimate rate. There was similarly high advisor commission that we see in the Australian market, so you could get 100% first year. But from the consumer perspective, you could lapse and change your policy every 2 or 3 years. The advisor could justify that, getting his 100% every 2 or 3 years, and the person's rates, if they were healthy, stayed down. So what they were seeing in the US was something like 30 to 40% first-year lapse rates coming out of the select YRT design. So that was a fundamentally different design, which we don't have, fortunately, in Australia. What that meant was with 30 to 40% lapse rates, the companies just were not making money. The industry was suffering very poor financial results through that period of time. And coupled with the very high lapse rates, was extremely high mortality. So they were seeing massively higher mortality rates at the very early durations than they would have expected because of that. We don't have the same nature of product here with the Select YRT, fortunately. But what we do have, as you've alluded to, is we've got some of the very similar features. We have the very high agents commission, so there is, and agents may be doing this for purely altruistic reasons, but financially there's a massive incentive for them to move business and to get 100% first-year commission. If they can find a reason, then it would be perfectly rational behaviour for them to move a consumer, if they can, to a better product. One of the things that we have, and again, I refer back to Clive's presentation earlier, was we have an industry where companies have very different premium rate structures. So some companies have targeted rates in the middle age bands, 40 to 45, 50, and then they steepen their rate curve above that. So it's actually relatively easy to find situations where you can absolutely benefit at certain ages by moving the product and getting much cheaper mortality rates going forward. From an agent, they're getting 100% first-year commission. They're selling a product with lower premiums, potentially, or a lower premium increase to the consumer. There's the research houses driving the design issues so that, again, advisors can say, well, this is a better product because it's rated A by IRIS versus this one, which is rated B. So we do have many of the features that drive potential anti-selective behaviour going on, because the people who can will, but those who can't are left behind, and that's where it gets anti-selective, is we're left with that rump. Now, to the extent that our lapse rates are only in the order of 12% by number, 15% to 16% by premium amount, we do have a lesser effect in our business. So we're not seeing the same massive changes in the Australian market as existed in the US market. But 1% or 2% per year is pretty significant. I mean, if it continued at that level, and there would be reasons as to why it might wear off. I mean, ultimately, if your portfolio has had a high number of lapses, then there's less people left to anti-select and so on. But you can see situations quite easily where you could end up with mortality being up to 15, 20, 25% worse than you would initially assume. And that's when the sort of anti-select lapse spiral that we see in income protection right now starts to get worse and has potentially more impact.
Just to add to that as well, if I may, there's a great quote in Martin's paper that I point you to on this, Mike, as well, that and I suppose I characterise it in a way that the US experience was probably analogous to a frog jumping directly into boiling water and very quickly jumping out again, whereas the question we may have to ask ourselves here is whether we're slowly being boiled alive, and because the reality was the design of their products gave rise quite quickly, but also very sharply, to very poor lapse experience. So it was much more immediately evident, and at least in part drove, I would suggest, a need for a speedy change to what was going on in the market. So, you know, it's top of page 6 of the paper is the first paragraph of the bit I'm referring to. I won't read it all out now, but there's no question that the design features that they had, and I guess I'd take one exception to Martin, or extend your comments rather, that not only they obviously had Select and YRT business, I guess they could have gone one stage even worse and had Preferred Lives YRT business. That might have been an even sharper shock for them. So we do have some important points of difference, but there are some very significant points of similarity between what we're seeing, albeit perhaps on a slower burn potentially than was evidenced in other markets.
Roland Cummings, I think to some extent it's sort of self-evident, as you said, that if you're going to have higher lapses, you'll have higher selective lapsation, because being humans, you naturally think, well, if I'm feeling slightly sick or I think I may be getting maybe about to die soon, then I won't lapse the policy. To me, in terms of the current potential worsening mortality, there's lots of potential causes for that, not the least of which is the deterioration in underwritings, you know, increase in underwriting levels over the recent years. So in terms of sort of the theory as to is selective lapsation going to be a problem, it's probably, for me, comes down to whether you think these high lapse rates that we're seeing are a factor of the current economic conditions, or whether they're going to be continuing and worsening over time, or whether it's a case of we've got higher economic conditions now, they're high now, they may go back to a slightly higher point due to the maturing of the portfolio in Australia, but we're not going to actually see that steady climb.
Thanks, Rowan. Yes, absolutely. That is a consideration. There is also that element, though, of to what extent are they reflected in our existing assumptions, and is there a gap there that we still haven't fully addressed as well?
I want to add a bit of colour onto what Martin said earlier about what the FSC industry studies show and doesn't show. The FSC experience studies has shown for a long time that with duration, mortality increases. The challenge is to construct an analysis that show that that's related to lapses. And that's what we weren't able to do for this investigation, because we didn't set out to do an investigation with lapse as well, and we don't therefore collect the first 12 months of lapses. So that's the reason why we didn't publish anything. But in terms of the evidence that are consistent with that hypothesis that we're discussing today, there is plenty of evidence that show that if you weigh the mortality by some insured, you see a very clear trend of increasing mortality for up to 15 years, even in the Australian market.
Thanks, Juan.
Sorry, that was a long way round. Rob DeSoyser. Couple of points, questions. The first one is, I think I agree that lapse rates will generate an element of anti-selection in there. How much of that is offset by the mortality improvements that are also underlying? Notwithstanding that, though, the YRT design, as you say, is, you know, not been around that long, in 10, 20 years, in my terms, not that long. What we're actually seeing there is that as these policies age, the premium increases are going to get higher as older ages come through. And we've also got quite a few locked-in benefit designs that are not necessarily the same as the new products. I agree that there could be some pressures there to increase the anti-selection. But there are things that I think we can do in terms of benefit design that we should consider, because we don't want to get into this spiral that if we reprice, particularly in force books, we drive up even larger premium increases and therefore create that downward spiral you talked about. And I wonder whether there's things we can do in terms of changing the way we automatically increase premiums. Think about alternatives like allowing the cover to fall as they go into higher ages. Maybe that's with an option. Whether we can do things about the balance between new business premium rates and in-force, and whether we should be starting to think as an industry about those sort of positionings. Obviously, there's a balance between competition and the rates with in-force versus new business, but there is things, I think, there that the need probably to manage all sorts of lapses, not just those these that may be causing anti-selection.
Thanks, Rob. Interesting point, and it was in one of the drafts. Did it make it into the final? I can't remember, but possible design changes is certainly something that we think is a better solution, a more sustainable solution for the industry rather than premium rate reactions. As you point out, a premium rate reaction is going to drive increased lapse behaviour, is going to drive a worse problem for us. So longer term design aspects of the product are probably better, in our view, a better solution. And I think I even...
Section 8.
We actually talk about the construction of the product, potentially changing advisor remuneration, splitting it 50% first year, 50% fifth year, some form of hybrid level design perhaps, so maybe not the full level term that they have in the US, but maybe some form of subsidised level versus so that the premium steps are reduced, potentially turning off CPI indexation after a certain age, potentially going to some form of decreasing term assurance. While people tend to purchase more insurance as they age, the need isn't necessarily there the same, so that a decreasing term policy, and it doesn't need to be a decreasing term that fully reflects the mortality increases, it could be some sort of, again, hybrid mechanism. But if we can design a product that doesn't display the same step changes each year in premium rates, and somehow controls the premium levels, then that will help. And then with the benefit features and so on as well, if we do something that changes some of the benefit features that we offer in trauma, for example, there might be design issues there that we can look at. So from a sustainability perspective, it is definitely not just about premium rate reaction.
Just on the subject of product design changes, can I just take a quick straw poll? And Martin, you've got a higher elevation. You can see how many hands go up here. One of the questions that keeps coming up to my mind is YRT versus level premiums, and whether we go back to the future of level premiums. Can I just get a show of hands of people in the audience who feel that a migration back to level premiums might be? Bearing in mind Mike Thornton's very, very accurate comments around the characteristics of this market, so do keep those in mind. But who feels that it's viable to contemplate a return to level premiums and away from YRT? Show of hands, if you think it's viable.
About 10 in total.
Okay.
We can debate at the coffee break as to why people think it's not viable. Certainly, I know Greg's got some views around business management in terms of planning and so on, because the YRT nature and so on can help us out from a planning perspective, but there are other reasons. Rob, sorry, your point on mortality improvements as well. One of the things with a change for anti-selective lapses being potentially, like I say, 2-3%, is that it can be masked by all sorts of things. So mortality improvements could have masked it in the past. So we've had very high levels of mortality improvement in the past that may have masked some of the effect. If those effects drop off, then potentially it'll become more observable as well. But there's also obesity. There's a variety of factors that need to be considered. This is one of them that we think bears more consideration than has been given to it thus far.
Sorry, and just to add to that, the third point on here as well, which I know gets some airplay in the paper, is new business. A key area where this could have been masked in recent times is whilst we've enjoyed over the last decade a healthy growth in total volumes, and in particular new business, as new businesses come on, if in a growing population, insured population essentially, this effect will be masked. If that's flattening out, stabilizing, or even worse, declining over time, then relative to its natural rate of growth, then this is the sort of environment where we might see this effect becoming more visible or coming to the surface compared with prior years.
A question without notice. We talk about, and Rob mentioned, some potential changes to benefit designs and so forth. Pardon me. But we do have a lot of things in the market. We complain about a lot of our trauma products being very research house driven. Here we're talking about potential changes to products because of the anti-selective effect of YRT and increased lapses and so forth. What do you think is going to be the impetus to make these changes in the market? Because there's lots of things we don't like about the way the products are structured. Is there going to be something that's going to, or how do you see that actually happening, as opposed to us sort of getting dragged along with the products as they evolve, as we have in the past?
I'm afraid we're out of time for that question. It's 3:05. No, it's an extremely valid question. Mike alluded to the burning platform that they had in the US, which we don't have to the same extent here yet. If profitability results in the future do deteriorate, though, we've seen a gradual deterioration in the recent past. If that continues, then potentially we will have the burning platform that we will need to drive some of the changes. Part of it might be for the consumer benefit. I mean, you can argue or make an argument that YRT, as it is sold right now, really benefits one party out of the transaction, and that party is the advisor. The actual consumer would be better served potentially with a level premium product for a period of 15 years. They have price stability. They're not faced with the increases that we see every year in YRT. So you can make arguments for different product designs and so on. And as we see in the US, the level premium term products are not without their own selective lapse issues. So I don't know what will necessarily drive change in the short term. And maybe massive change isn't necessary. But being aware of the possibility and considering it in what we do as an industry in terms of sustainability is something that I think we should be doing.
Okay, well, it just falls to me to thank the presenters. I encourage you to provide feedback via the smartphone app or the sheets. I found that a very interesting session, and thank you to Martin and Duncan. Please express our appreciation in the usual way.